Chapter 69 introduces some respectable characters with whom the reader is already acquainted, and shows how Monks and the Jew laid their worthy heads together on the evening following, that upon which the three worthies mentioned in the last chapter disposed of their little matter of business as there narrated. Mr. William Sykes, awakening from a nap, drowsily growled forth an inquiry what time of night it was. The room in which Mr. Sykes propounded this question was not one of those he had tenanted previous to the Chertsey expedition, although it was in the same quarter of the town, and was situated at no great distance from his former lodgings. It was not, in appearance, so desirable a habitation as his old quarters. Being a mean and badly furnished apartment, of very limited size, lighted only by one small window in the shelving roof, and abutting on a close and dirty lane. Nor were there wanting other indications of the good gentleman's having gone down in the world of late. For a great scarcity of furniture, and total absence of comfort, together with the disappearance of all such small movables as spare clothes and linen, bespoke a state of extreme poverty. While the meager and attenuated condition of Mr. Sykes himself would have fully confirmed these symptoms, if they had stood in any need of corroboration. The housebreaker was lying on the bed, wrapped in his white greatcoat, by way of dressing gown, and displaying a set of features in no degree improved by the cadaverous hue of illness, and the addition of a soiled nightcap, and a stiff, black beard of a week's growth. The dog sat at the bedside, now eyeing his master with a wistful look, and now pricking his ears, and uttering a low growl as some noise in the street, or in the lower part of the house, attracted his attention. Seated by the window, busily engaged in patching an old waistcoat which formed a portion of the robber's ordinary dress, was a female, so pale and reduced with watching and privation, that there would have been considerable difficulty in recognizing her as the same Nancy who has already figured in this tale, but for the voice in which she replied to Mr. Sykes' question. Not long gone seven, apostrophe said the girl. How do you feel tonight, Bill? ... as weak as water, ... replied Mr. Sykes, with an imprecation on his eyes and limbs. Here, lend us a hand, and let me get off this thundering bed anyhow. ... Illness had not improved Mr. Sykes' temper, for, as the girl raised him up, and led him to a chair, he muttered various curses on her awkwardness, and struck her. Whining are you? ... said Sykes. Come. Don't stand sniveling there. If you can't do anything better than that, cut off altogether. Do you hear me? ... I hear you, ... replied the girl, turning her face aside, and forcing a laugh. What fancy have you got in your head now? ... Oh. You've thought better of it, have you? ... growled Sykes, marking the tear which trembled in her eye. All the better for you, you have. ... Why, you don't mean to say, you'd be hard upon me tonight, Bill, ... said the girl, laying her hand upon his shoulder. No. ... cried Mr. Sykes. Why not? ... Such a number of nights, ... said the girl, with a touch of woman's tenderness, which communicated something like sweetness of tone, even to her voice. Such a number of nights as I've been patient with you, nursing and caring for you, as if you had been a child. And this the first, that I've seen you like yourself. You wouldn't have served me as you did just now, if you'd thought of that, would you? Come, come, say you wouldn't. ... Well then, ... rejoined Mr. Sykes, I wouldn't. Why, damn now, the girl's whining again. ... It's nothing, ... said the girl, throwing herself into a chair. Don't you seem to mind me? It'll soon be over. ... What'll be over? ... demanded Mr. Sykes in a savage voice. What foolery are you up to now, again? Get up and bustle about, and don't come over me with your woman's nonsense. ... At any other time, this remonstrance, and the tone in which it was delivered would have had the desired effect, but the girl, being really weak and exhausted, dropped her head over the back of the chair and fainted before Mr. Sykes could get out a few of the appropriate oaths with which, on similar occasions, he was accustomed to garnish his threats. Not knowing very well what to do in this uncommon emergency, for Miss Nancy's hysterics were usually of that violent kind which the patient fights and struggles out of without much assistance, Mr. Sykes tried a little blasphemy, and finding that mode of treatment wholly ineffectual, called for assistance. "What's the matter here, my dear?" said Fagin, looking in. "Lend a hand to the girl, can't you?" replied Sykes impatiently. "Don't stand chattering and grinning at me." With an exclamation of surprise, Fagin hastened to the girl's assistance, while Mr. John Dawkins, otherwise the artful dodger, who had followed his venerable friend into the room, hastily deposited on the floor a bundle with which he was laden, and snatching a bottle from the grasp of Master Charles Bates, who came close at his heels, uncorked it in a twinkling with his teeth, and poured a portion of its contents down the patient's throat, previously taking a taste, himself, to prevent mistakes. "Give her a whiff of fresh air with the bellows, Charlie," said Mr. Dawkins, "and you slap her hands, Fagin, while Bill undoes the petticoats." These united restoratives, administered with great energy, especially that department consigned to Master Bates, who appeared to consider his share in the proceedings a piece of unexampled pleasantry, were not long in producing the desired effect. The girl gradually recovered her senses, and, staggering to a chair by the bedside, hit her face upon the pillow, leaving Mr. Sykes to confront the newcomers in some astonishment at their unlooked-for appearance. "Why, what evil wind has blown you here?" he asked Fagin. "No evil wind at all, my dear, for evil winds blow nobody any good, and I've brought something good with me that you'll be glad to see. Dodger, my dear, open the bundle, and give Bill the little trifles that we spent all our money on this morning." In compliance with Mr. Fagin's request, the artful untied this bundle, which was of large size and formed of an old tablecloth, and handed the articles it contained, one by one, to Charlie Bates, who placed them on the table with various encomiums on their rarity and excellence. "Sich a rabbit pie, Bill," exclaimed that young gentleman, disclosing to view a huge pasty, "sich delicate creeters, with sich tender limbs, Bill, that the worry bones melt in your mouth, and there's no occasion to pick 'em. Half a pound of 7 and 6 penny green, so precious strong, that if you mix it with boiling water, it'll go nigh to blow the lid of the teapot off. A pound and a half of moist sugar, that the niggers didn't work at all at, afore they got it up to sich a pitch of goodness, oh no. 2 half-quartern brands, pound of best fresh, piece of double Gloucester, and, to wind up all, some of the richest sort you ever lushed." Uttering this last panegyry, Master Bates produced, from one of his extensive pockets, a full-sized wine bottle, carefully corked, while Mr. Dawkins, at the same instant, poured out a wine glassful of raw spirits from the bottle he carried, which the invalid tossed down his throat without a moment's hesitation. "Ah!" said Fagin, rubbing his hands with great satisfaction. "You will do, Bill, you will do now. Do." Exclaimed Mr. Sykes. "I might have been done for 20 times over afore you'd have done anything to help me. What do you mean by leaving a man in this state 3 weeks and more, you false-hearted wagabond?" "Only hear him, boys." Said Fagin, shrugging his shoulders. "And us come to bring him all these beautiful things." "The things is well enough in their way," observed Mr. Sykes, a little soothed as he glanced over the table, But what have you got to say for yourself? Why you should leave me here, down in the mouth, health, blunt, and everything else, and take no more notice of me, all this mortal time, than if I was that ear dog. Drive him down, Charlie. Apostrophe, I never see such a jolly dog as that, apostrophe, cried Master Bates, doing as he was desired. Smelling the grub like a old lady a going to market. He'd make his fortune on the stage, that dog would, and revive the drama besides. Apostrophe, hold your din, apostrophe, cried Sykes, as the dog retreated under the bed. Still growling angrily. What have you got to say for yourself, you withered old fence, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I was away from London, a week and more, my dear, on a plant, apostrophe, replied the Jew. And what about the other fortnight? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Sykes. What about the other fortnight, that you've left me lying here, like a sick rat in his hole? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I couldn't help it, Bill. I can't go into a long explanation before company, but I couldn't help it, upon my honor. Apostrophe, upon your what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, growled Sykes, with excessive disgust. Here. Cut me off a piece of that pie, one of you boys, to take the taste of that out of my mouth, or it'll choke me dead. Apostrophe, don't be out of temper, my dear, apostrophe, urged Fagin, submissively. I have never forgot you, Bill, never once. Apostrophe, no. I'll pound it that you hand, apostrophe, replied Sykes, with a bitter grin. You've been scheming and plotting away, every hour that I have laid shivering and burning here, and Bill was to do this, and Bill was to do that, and Bill was to do it all, dirt cheap, as soon as he got well, and was quite poor enough for your work. If it hadn't been for the girl, I might have died. Apostrophe, there now, Bill, apostrophe, remonstrated Fagin, eagerly catching at the word. If it hadn't been for the girl. Who but poor old Fagin was the means of your having such a handy girl about you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he says true enough there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nancy, coming hastily forward. Let him be, let him be. Apostrophe, Nancy's appearance gave a new turn to the conversation. For the boys, receiving a sly wink from the wary old Jew, began to ply her with liquor. Of which, however, she took very sparingly, while Fagin, assuming an unusual flow of spirits, gradually brought Mr. Sykes into a better temper, by affecting to regard his threats as a little pleasant banter, and, moreover, by laughing very heartily at one or two rough jokes, which, after repeated applications to the spirit bottle, he condescended to make. It's all very well, apostrophe, said Mr. Sykes. But I must have some blunt from you tonight. Apostrophe, I haven't a piece of coin about me, apostrophe, replied the Jew. Then you've got lots at home, apostrophe, retorted Sykes, and I must have some from there. Apostrophe, lots. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Fagin, holding up his hands. I haven't so much as would apostrophe, I don't know how much you've got, and I dare say you hardly know yourself, as it would take a pretty long time to count it, apostrophe, said Sykes, but I must have some tonight, and that's flat. Apostrophe, well, well, apostrophe, said Fagin, with a sigh, I'll send the artful round presently. Apostrophe, you won't do nothing of the kind, apostrophe, rejoined Mr. Sykes. The artful's a deal too artful, and would forget to come, or lose his way, or get dodged by traps, and so be perwanted, or anything for an excuse, if you put him up to it. Nancy shall go to the ken and fetch it, to make all sure, and I'll lie down, and have a snooze while she's gone. Apostrophe, after a great deal of haggling and squabbling, Fagin beat down the amount of the required advance from £5 to £3, 4 and 6 pence, protesting with many solemn asseverations that that would only leave him 18 pence to keep house with, Mr. Sykes sullenly remarking that if he couldn't get any more he must accompany him home, with the Dodger and Master Bates put the eatables in the cupboard. The Jew then, taking leave of his affectionate friend, returned homeward, attended by Nancy and the boys. Mr. Sykes, meanwhile, flinging himself on the bed, and composing himself to sleep away the time until the young ladies return. In due course, they arrived at Fagin's abode, where they found Toby Crackit and Mr. Chitling intent upon their 15th game at cribbage, which it is scarcely necessary to say the latter gentleman lost, and with it, his 15th and last sixpence. Much to the amusement of his young friends, Mr. Crackit, apparently somewhat ashamed at being found relaxing himself with a gentleman, so much his inferior in station and mental endowments, yawned, and inquiring after Sykes, took up his hat to go. Has nobody been, Toby? Asked Fagin. Not a living leg, answered Mr. Crackit, pulling up his collar. It's been as dull as swipes. You ought to stand something handsome, Fagin, to recompense me for keeping house so long. Damn, I'm as flat as a juryman, and should have gone to sleep, as fast as Newgate, if I hadn't had the good natter to amuse this youngster. Horrid dull, I'm blessed if I am. With these and other ejaculations of the same kind, Mr. Toby Crackit swept up his winnings, and crammed them into his waistcoat pocket with a haughty air, as though such small pieces of silver were wholly beneath the consideration of a man of his figure. This done, he swaggered out of the room, with so much elegance and gentility, that Mr. Chitling, bestowing numerous admiring glances on his legs and boots till they were out of sight, assured the company that he considered his acquaintance cheap at 15 sixpences an interview, and that he didn't value his losses the snap of his little finger. What a rum chap you are, Tom! Said Master Bates, highly amused by this declaration. Not a bit of it, replied Mr. Chitling. Am I, Fagin? A very clever fellow, my dear, said Fagin, patting him on the shoulder, and winking to his other pupils. And Mr. Crackit is a heavy swell, and he, Fagin? Asked Tom. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.